So over the past two episodes, we've discussed the red flags, the history of, and the issues we take with Tether and Bitfinex. But after going over all of that, including Crypto Capital Corp and the subsidiaries and Deltek and all of these other interesting side chains, I think it's time for us to address some questions from people that we've received. So I think there's a good amount of questions that we've gotten. What's the first question that you would like to address?
So I got an interesting question which asks about the recent increase in Tether trading volume on Kraken and what might be causing that, what it means, and what it would mean if the peg were to break on Kraken. First, I'm going to say that I think the volumes exploded because there are not a ton of ways for US citizens and residents to get Tether. Kraken represents a place where people can trade their dollars and get tethers for a dollar. Tether has seen increased adoption in various DeFi protocols, which would be a legitimate reason for people to want these tethers. And there's still a variety of no and low KYC exchanges that use Tether. And so if someone wants to trade on one of those exchanges, they're going to need generally a way to get tethers. So I think a lot of the change in volume has just been that it's been a bull market recently, and so there's increased demand for Tether.
Why would someone not, if they went ahead and put fiat on Kraken, why would they not go ahead and just purchase Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever the main coin is that they want to utilize, whether it's on Uniswap or on Binance or on whatever non kind of KYC AML exchange they feel like utilizing? Why would they not just use that fiat to purchase that main coin and make their swap after that versus trading into Tether? I don't really understand.
That's often a thing I wonder about as well. And I think the answer is probably that there are niche areas, especially in certain DeFi protocols, where having the Tether itself lets you enter into certain interactions, certain contracts, and certain things in the position or in the way you want to do it. And so people want Tethers to do that. What you're saying is, like, if someone wants to trade at Binance and they're trying to avoid KYC, they don't need to get into Tether because they can just get into Bitcoin, send the Bitcoin there, and avoid it that way. So yeah, that's true. And that's what I would expect a lot of people to do. But I also think the Binance futures that are now collateralized in Tether may be influencing this as well. Being able to put up your Tether as collateral for the futures for various DeFi contracts and protocols means that there's going to be some amount of Tether demand in the US. And as those things have developed, as the market's gone into a bull run, I think that we've seen that demand increase and therefore more people want to get Tethers.
Well, okay. So look, I'm not here to argue, but I'm not buying it. And the reason I'm not buying it is because essentially the way I've heard people discuss Tether and the way it's utilized is that it's a big OTC thing, that if you want to move whatever, you can trade with Tether that way. Kraken being this big movement for Tether, no one who's using Tether is going to want to report that they're utilizing Tether, especially American citizens who are not supposed to be holding Tether. The idea that the peg at Kraken mattered, I think it used to, that isn't the case anymore. I also really doubt that the money going in and out of Tether is people trying to acquire Tether for other means. Like, at best for Kraken, I can imagine that the people buying and selling Tethers on their exchange are arbitragers.
Yeah, I do want to put a little bit of context on it. The volume has exploded relative to historic Kraken Tether volume. But even now, the 24-hour Tether volume on that pair is 110 million. And so compared to the size of Tether, it's nothing. We're talking about a $37 billion stablecoin. The amount traded on Kraken is largely insignificant, but I disagree on the Kraken peg. I think if there was someone who had any kind of insider knowledge, the Kraken peg is one of the first things you would see break.
But the Kraken peg is going to break at the same time that every other Tether USD peg is going to break. The idea that Tether...
But, I mean, what are the other Tether USD pegs? You're talking about what, FTX and Bitfinex?
FTX is certainly the big one.
it's dominated by FTX, Bitfinex, and Kraken. There's basically no Tether USD volume underneath that. Because I was looking at that.
The problem with Tether, this is what we were talking about before. If there is a big, huge black swan event, I used to believe there could be this weird unraveling where people found out about it first and they started to move and then the Tether peg broke. And I don't think that that's a reality anymore. If Tether is going to get screwed over by law enforcement and regulators, they're going to vanish. It'll be instantly. They're just going to freeze it the way they did with Liberty Reserve. It's absurd to think they're going to, like, allow people to move their money out of like, why? Why would they possibly do that? I think this idea that there would be this leeway period where people could, like, move their money out is insane. I don't think that's a reality at all.
Yeah, we had that argument with Hasu back in 2018, where he wrote an article about Tether, where he basically argued that if it were to unwind, it wouldn't be that big of a deal because people would have claim on whatever backing there was and it'd be able to wind down. And we said, well, that's not necessarily what's happened historically. I'm not necessarily saying that the peg would break before we saw, like, a Department of Justice try to shut them down. But imagine if there are insiders close to Bitfinex or Tether who find out about a new subpoena before it hits the news, or they see what the third party attestation of Tether's reserves are going to look like the day before it goes public.
This is again optimistic in regard to how the US justice system would respond to an issue that they saw was massive. Now, Liberty Reserve, I don't know how many billions they had at the time. What, two?
I want to say, like, closer to one, but I'm not positive.
So Liberty Reserve was significantly smaller than what Tether represents today. So to me, the Department of Justice or the CFTC or whoever would make a move against Tether isn't going to be like, let's subpoena them and get whatever information we can from they didn't do that for Liberty Reserve. They ended it.
I still think there's cases where, like, especially I'm thinking specifically of the New York Attorney General, where they have a date where they're going to need to show their reserves by, and there are going to be individuals who see that information before the New York Attorney General and before the public.
Essentially, I don't think the Kraken peg matters. You do. I don't think the Kraken volume matters. You do. I think these are people just arbing, and that is, like, a big part of Tether's history anyway. So it doesn't surprise me.
I think that's fair. I mean, it's probably largely driven by someone doing some kind of arbitrage, because that's the primary use case for Tether.
Let's go to the next one. Given the history or precedent set from Tether, how do you see traditional regulation interacting with the crypto economy? Do you see it as old world having complete access to the crypto world, or are they watching to see if the ecosystem can self-regulate?
I think it's taken a long time for regulators to understand the roles that cryptocurrency plays. And I think it's also taken a long time for many of these cryptocurrencies to get large enough to matter to the regulators. Tether has been under investigation by the CFTC, the Department of Justice, and the New York Attorney General, at least those three, since 2018. So the regulators are aware of cryptocurrency companies. And we're seeing increasing guidance, I would say, from the Treasury, from lawmakers, and from other people that they are going to expect a lot of these cryptocurrency assets to follow regulations similar to their traditional finance counterparts. I've got my own issues with the Stable Act, but I think that you can tell just by the fact that it was proposed and came out of committee that there's a push for these things to be regulated more heavily than they are now. And so I would expect over the next 5 years, maybe longer, to see a significant number of regulatory actions and an increase in new regulatory guidance and laws passed to specifically regulate these assets.
I absolutely agree with you on all of that. I think that the government is going to do something to make sure that they get their taxes and they get theirs. I think that is the reality of the situation. But something else we need to address, which is value is changing before our very eyes.
How's that connect to regulators?
Well, I think that the idea is, if we're thinking about regulation and we're thinking about value, we're thinking about the transfer of value, we're thinking about just even the way that we reflect USD value.
So your point is more that there's a move writ large towards a cashless society where traditional power mechanisms have been minimized in favor of some kind of economic power, and that crypto is important in that transition.
I think whether we like it or not, there's clearly a groundswell for this idea. The idea that whether we like it or not, whether it's money laundering or not, like I can look at all of these crazy, ridiculous transactions and go, well, this clearly looks like money laundering, but like, what is value? What is money laundering? And what is money? When at this point, now we're so far removed from even US dollars. And already regulators, they're not even caught up to ICOs and SPACs. How are they supposed to keep up with NFTs?
I think the thing we should remind people of here is that regulators quite often are coming in after the thing has blown up, after the people have gotten hurt, after the thing's gone, and that many, especially US regulators, are hesitant to step in before that point because they don't want to be seen as responsible for causing the crash and for hurting the investors and for all of that stuff. And I mean, that's a dynamic we've seen play out repeatedly across these regulators over a long period of time. And so it could be that the IRS, the CFTC, the Department of Justice, whoever is working on better understanding NFTs, tracking them, trying to figure out their market dynamics, but they're unlikely to step in until they've got a clear-cut case.
Are regulators waiting to see what happens, or is there going to be self-regulation? Like, is this some sort of this isn't his exact words, but is this like a honeypot, or are they waiting to see people do something on their own?
I don't think they're waiting for people to self-regulate, Tether, whatever, out of the market. I have considered the possibility that Tether has been compromised and is a honeypot. And it seems plausible, especially when you learn about like the connections between crypto capital and the Colombian cartels, or the persistent rumors of Tether usage by other organized crime groups like the Triads and stuff like that. It seems like it could potentially be a valuable intelligence asset if it's giving you any kind of visibility there. However, I still think it's more likely that just financial fraud cases are challenging to construct, and especially challenging to construct when they involve multiple other active investigations, investigations into co-conspirators and associated parties and stuff like that. So my intuition is that's more likely the reason rather than it being a honeypot or something like that.
Yeah, I generally agree. And I don't think, as much as I would love to believe in the idea of self-regulation, I have yet to see a successful self-regulatory mechanism in any field.
The closest I can think of would be FINRA.
Yeah, people always mention it. And what examples does anyone have of them acting in such a way that it affects anyone?
There's not many. The most they do is they take away your license and it becomes slightly harder for you to be a broker dealer.
It's not the end of the world if you're a shady broker dealer with a bunch of clients.
I think it could be valuable for us to go back to the question of audits and auditors and talk about Tether and their audit and whether or not it's even possible for Tether to get an audit. So the question that I got directly was, is it really that hard to get an audit? Could Tether be telling the truth that they simply couldn't find an auditor willing to work with them? And, well, I think that it is probably challenging for an auditor to audit a stablecoin. Just because auditors like to have very well-established standards on a thing before they do the thing, because that's just who they are as people. However, Tether had an auditor who was willing to work with them. They brought on Friedman to audit both theirs and Bitfinex's books to provide some assurance to the public. As that process went on, eventually Tether made a statement saying that Friedman's procedures were too detailed, and so because of that, Tether would not be getting an audit. So that leaves us with the impression, at least, that Friedman was willing to make an attempt at auditing Bitfinex and Tether, producing some kind of audit, but that Bitfinex and Tether were not prepared for what an auditor was going to expect of them.
Yeah, I think there's certainly some levels to that. I think the reality is that no stablecoin has gotten a proper audit. Tether has certainly never gotten one, and whatever we've seen from them, whether it was Friedman giving them a memo or FSS, that was Free, Sporkin, and Sullivan, giving them an attestation as lawyers saying, we looked at a bank account. So again, not even a proper that isn't even a proper attestation. And then we have the Deltek attestation, where they say, there's money here. Again, not an attestation even, really.
They specifically don't say there's money there. They say the portfolio cash value of Tether is sufficient.
Regardless, we have a bunch of, quote, attestations that aren't attestations and definitely are not audits.
So I think there's also two potential questions here. We're talking about auditing a stablecoin, which is a new and difficult thing, but there's also the business of Tether itself, right? And the business of Tether itself is not fundamentally that different from other businesses. And so it seems reasonable that there would be the ability to do some kind of audit of Tether, the business, that would then show that they had the required backing. Somewhat complicating this, there is the other set of Tether attestations that we haven't mentioned yet, which was when the very brief period at the end of 2016 and beginning of 2017, when Tether actually did find an accounting firm, TopSun CPAs, out of Taiwan that was willing to give them monthly attestations. So Tether has been able to, in the past, engage people to attest to their books, including CPAs. They were able to hire an auditing firm who said that they would be able to provide an audit. And then when that firm tried to provide the audit, Tether said the procedures were too detailed, the audit will not be coming.
I guess my what I'm trying to discern more is this idea that other stablecoins, whether it's TrueUSD or Paxos or BUSD or USDC, they talk about how they provide attestations, and Paxos specifically, I think they had a thing on there where they specifically said, like, are we audited? Yes. I hope some web manager marketing person is like, yeah, we're audited. Great. And they don't know anything about finance, and that's why they're doing it. But if I'm going to afford Paxos that same kind of leeway and leverage, I guess I should offer that to Tether too, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. The issue with that there is, in that FAQ, there's a decent amount of text where they provide some context as to what they're actually providing, right? Whereas Tether just made the blanket claim for years that there would be regular audits and never even provided anything close to resembling that. So there's that gap there on that specific issue. And then, like, about the transparency page, Tether still claims on multiple places on their site, and I checked this today, that they're fully transparent and that at any time you can check the Tether backing and the Tethers in circulation on their page, and that's what makes them transparent, right? And so Tether is still in multiple places and repeatedly claiming this is where you should go to get a view as to what Tether is right now. On that page for years, Tether has been lying. That's a material difference from a technical difference between an audit and an attestation where additional context is provided.
What's their exit strategy and what are the potential implications if they don't pass their audit?
I have no idea what their exit strategy is. I've tried to sketch it out a couple different times. Generally, what I come up against is it feels almost at this point like if the Tether principals had warning that some action was coming, that Tether, the business, was not likely to survive, that they would flee. They would pull an Arthur Hayes and they'd become fugitives and try to avoid being captured. This would be difficult for Phil Potter because he lives in New York City, but the other ones who are still currently associated with, I can't imagine we're going to see any of them in the United States anytime soon.
I don't think anyone expected to see Arthur Hayes in the U.S. anytime soon. I think the surprise with Arthur Hayes is that he's going to end up turning himself in. And I think we're going to see something similar with the executives, possibly, or not, right? To me, they have no reason to ever show up. Juan Carlo Devasini and Vanderveld. These are two guys who have spent their entire lives outside of the U.S. And in my humble opinion, without knowing their specific thoughts, I assume they feel like they have to answer to zero U.S. law enforcement agencies. So the idea that these guys would go ahead and walk over to the U.S. in handcuffs seems absurd to me. And exit strategy to me implies that they would need to run. We think like the U.S. is operating Mossad-style CIA-level black ops, like helicopter swoop-ins to capture billion-dollar executives. I don't think so. They have money. They're fine. I don't know what they would need. They're good.
Yeah. And I think the question would kind of be, how much cash do each of these people have access to, and how much of that would be coming like from the business itself or whatever. But yeah, the answer is plenty. Vanderveld was a successful investor before he was ever associated with Bitfinex or Tether.
And Juan Carlo was a doctor.
Yeah. He never actually practiced medicine, but he did graduate med school. But he made plenty of money in his first business, and he was retired when he first got involved with Bitfinex and Tether, and owns how many houses have we found so far? Like 3 or 4 or something ridiculous.
Right. So like, we've heard about others in other places. So
yeah. And so my intuition is that each of them has a place in a non-extradition or difficult to extradite country. With some amount of money that is hidden well enough that they are reasonably sure that it is accessible. Also, these guys have been in crypto since 2013. The entire selling point of cryptocurrency is censorship resistant and seizure resistant, right?
Yeah, but even besides that, I mean, these guys have been involved in offshore corporations and offshore banking and community banking and all these other things for a long time. And honestly, those are much better and more secure ways to move money without it getting frozen than the blockchain and things like Tether. I think as far as the leadership and executives are concerned, I don't think they're worried about having an exit strategy. I think they're fine. As far as the core business and passing the quarter, essentially, you know, they're calling it a quarterly audit. I don't know what to call it actually, but just answering to the New York AG every quarter.
What counts as failing?
I don't know. And I think that's gonna cause some sort of hiccup, I would assume. But what the New York AG does, I have no idea. And you're not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to pretend to know what the answer would be if there was some big discrepancy. I have no idea.
What counts as failing? Like, who's to say that Juan Carlo didn't sell JL, one of the hundreds of thousands of shares of iFinix, and he sold it to him for $1,000. And so now the valuation at the last share traded of iFinix is now $100 billion. And Tether is exclusively backed by iFinix shares. According to them, that's still fully backed. Like, and so I don't necessarily know that there's a clean failure case from Bitfinex and Tether's perspective with regards to that audit. I anticipate they'll be able to find some kind of assets that total up to a number that matches the number of tethers in circulation. And at this point, I'm reasonably sure the market will just go, huh, yeah, that looks pretty cool.
I'm more and more in that camp as well, where I think the only way to make Tether worthless legitimately is to freeze all of the tethers. And I'm not suggesting that I'm calling for regulators to make that kind of move. But I'm trying to, everyone in the space always loves to talk about game theory, blah, blah, blah. And I guess in some sense, I am trying to think about it in that game theory way. If regulators had to use everything in their power, to me, it makes sense that they would decide to freeze all tethers. It wouldn't take much. You'd need to get the leadership and that's it, you know?
I think part of the dynamics here, game theory wise, is that I think a lot of Tether is held by a relatively small number of people. I think there's a relatively dense concentration of holdings of Tether. And so there is a general incentive not to defect. But if there's going to be a defection, you want to be the first one to defect so you can get the maximum benefit out of that defection before the system itself starts to tighten up. So that goes back to why I think the Kraken peg is potentially valuable, why the other pegs in the premiums are still things I check. Because if one of the major tether holders ever decided to defect, ever decided that they were no longer confident in tether and they were getting out of that position in any way they could on the open market, that's where you would see that indicated.
I fully disagree. Anyone who's defecting at that point isn't going to make it so fucking obvious as to go to Kraken and take their USDT and trade them for USD. There's way simpler, better ways to go about it.
I think the peg and Kraken would largely be a byproduct of other things happening. So as the premium on USDT exchanges got pushed up, as they tried to exchange them for Bitcoin or things like that, you would then see traders begin to try to arb that. And as they had trouble arbing that because of the large entity trying to exit, the Kraken peg starts to deviate. It's a second order effect, not a first order.
Fair enough. Do you have another question you want to address?
So we could talk about Deltek and who is Deltek and what does that mean?
We've done our own little deep dive into what they represent. I can point out that the inventor of Inspector Gadget is the one who mainly runs it, who had absolutely nothing to do with finance up until that point, but then moved completely out of cartoon making and television and into the world of offshore banking. You have looked deeper into the ties between Deltek and Asia.
Yeah, so I'll give some broad strokes context here. Deltek was founded in, I want to say, the 1940s, and existed for a long time as largely a Latin American investment vehicle where they would try to buy bad debts, failing businesses, things like that, and operate across Latin America. They had various subsidiaries like Deltek Asset Management in New York City, Deltek International Group, Deltek Bank, obviously. And these different entities were all part of the same Deltek, and a significant number of major Wall Street players at some point had interactions with Deltek Asset Management in New York, and they had some success investing across Latin America. At some point over in China, Isola Capital was formed, which basically inherited a bunch of the Deltek businesses and combined it with a bunch of other family offices and high net worth individuals in Asia who came together to form Isola Capital. A couple years ago, unclear exactly when, though I do know of a significant event that happened at Deltek a couple years ago, Isola Capital no longer owned Deltek Bank, and Deltek Bank was again somewhat independent. Now, Deltek Bank itself is a authorized agent in the Bahamas and has generally been a relatively small bank. If you look at their own statements, as late as the mid-aughts, they had just a couple billion in total assets across all of their different things until Tether, and it really seems to stay that way until Tether appears in 2018. And then they get the couple of billion from Tether, and now they're still the only known banking partner for Tether, and the only one Tether has ever mentioned, and Tether allegedly has $37 billion in assets somewhere.
Yeah, but they also have $37 billion in liabilities, right?
Yeah, sure, but the people who are holding the assets are presumably Deltek.
Another question I got is why there's silence in the media. I don't think there's significant silence in the media, personally. Maybe you have a different opinion. I think, you know, the topic is incredibly niche. We're talking about stablecoins, which are a niche topic involved in cryptocurrency, which is a niche topic involved in blockchain, which is a niche topic in finance, which is just a niche topic in and of itself. So the idea that the broader public is going to love this idea and be fascinated by, like, the fraud that is possibly Bitfinex and Tether is silly. But the people who do care about it, I mean, you know, there's a lot of journalists, including like Nick from CoinDesk and Ben Munster used to be a favorite of mine. There was also Adriana at Decrypt and a handful of others that I really enjoyed their work that they were presenting because continue to, especially with Nick, they present a very objective perspective. They talk about what the settlement actually means and what lawyers are saying and what traders are saying, and they try to give you this kind of rounded out idea of what the broader industry is feeling about this situation. Most of what you're going to see is going to just be beneficial to the space because that's their main source of income. So it makes sense, right?
I think there has been some really good reporting on Tether, and some journalists have done really great work. You mentioned Nick. I've been really impressed with his coverage of this. Laura Shin, when she interviewed Greg Pepin, had fantastic questions and handled that interview masterfully.
I've had issues with Laura Shin interviews, but that was a really, really good interview.
I'm also thinking of, I'm blanking on his last name. Robert, he wrote a couple of pieces.
Robert Yandahan.
Yes. Yeah, he wrote a couple of pieces for The Block about Bitfinex and crypto capital and some of that. And those were extraordinarily well
researched. Love him. He has not been around for a while, but yeah, love his objective perspective. Agreed.
And so I think
Matt Leising also had some really good pieces, you know, like it's fair to disagree with some of his perspectives later on. I think that's fine. But I really appreciated a lot of the work and effort that he put into following up on it. And when I would push him or you would push him on some of his later articles, he would say, like, I'm not saying that there aren't issues with this attestation. I'm saying there's an attestation, which I think is a fair perspective to have.
Yeah. And so I think it's also good just to, the Tether is an extraordinarily complicated story that involves understanding shell corporations, money laundering, cryptocurrencies, all these interrelated niche fields, which makes it difficult for someone to cover. And a lot of the things that you learn about Tether, you only really learn about Tether after you've dedicated a large amount of time to understanding very specific details in specific historical things. And so for a reporter who just gets assigned a story or something about the most recent court case or something like that, they're going to generally report it. They're going to take the facts that seem to be being presented and summarize them and write up an article about them. You're in any field, but especially in cryptocurrency, it's important when you're reading journalism to read for the facts, pull out what you can, and do not necessarily pull out or take the arguments that might be being presented or implied or things like that. And if you take that kind of tack with reporting as a whole, you'll be able to find value in a broader spectrum of reporting. Because even articles that made me incredibly mad just because they missed out on certain facts or missed certain things, when I was able to step back and take a couple breaths, they often did expose other things that I had not previously had insight into. I think it's a couple-fold issue. One, Tether and Bitfinex and all this is really hard. Two, it's not immediately clear that they're doing anything wrong. And so you don't want to cover them as if they are, if you're not sure they are. And three, there have been really good, investigative reporting done on Bitfinex and Tether.
The last question I'm going to have is, when and how is the end of Tether going to occur?
So I think the how is an easier question to answer. It seems unlikely that in the near future, the market is going to totally lose interest in Tether and we're going to see it just shrink to irrelevance. So I think expecting that as the end is unlikely, which leaves as the two likely ends, either there is no end for a long time and Tether continues to operate, or we see a regulator or law enforcement body step in and say, these things you have done are illegal and we are shutting this down. Then the question becomes, when would something like that happen? I don't know. They've been investigating them since 2018. If you'd asked me in 2018, my expectation is that it would have happened by 2021. But we are now in 2021 and it has not happened. So I no longer trust my instincts on when it might happen.
I have no instincts when it comes to when anymore. I don't think I have any idea of when or necessarily if. So as much as I want to believe that regulators and law enforcement would see this as a huge, huge red flag, I am not convinced that they fully understand the red flag that it actually is. How I used to think there would be kind of a couple different ways possible for how. I used to think there were probably a dozen different ways that Tether could unfold and unravel in my mind. And now there's really only one way, and that is law enforcement coming in and stopping everything. And again, that isn't me hoping they do it. It's just me saying I think that's legitimately only the only way that they could possibly stop Tether.
What if our next article is really, really good?
Yeah. Yeah. What if they just believe us? That was a good discussion about some interesting questions that were thrown our way. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Hopefully we did. I think we roundabout discussed everything that was addressed. If you see any that you want to throw in there right now, Bennett, go ahead.
I think we've covered, even if we didn't answer each question directly, we've covered a lot of similar material where hopefully you can make some inferences about what we would say.
And hopefully you and I can jump into detail about some other topics outside the scope of Tether, but still within it. So maybe crypto capital or Deltek, continue to delve down the rabbit hole of cryptocurrency fraud, scams, and shady businesses in general. So let's make sure we do this again soon. That's going to do it, friends. Remember, stay skeptical. That's going to do it, everybody. Remember, stay skeptical, friends.